Chapter 76. "Ah, good, you live." Grinwoodie came into the room with fresh clothes and a basket of food. Gavin was quivering on the floor. The vomiting had turned to dry heaves quickly enough, and the stomach cramps from the diuretic had passed some time ago. He'd been weekly sponge-bathing himself since then. It was mostly clean now, for all the good that did him. Grinwoodie gave him water first. Gavin rinsed his mouth of the residual taste of vomit and spat it out, then real food and clothes. Nor did the old man rush him, but finally, when Gavin was feeling warm and full for the first time in a year, and a little tipsy from what could have only amounted to a single cup of wine, the counterfeit slave motioned it was time to go. They left everything.
"I'll burn it later," Grinwoodie said.
Within a dozen paces out into a dim hall, he pushed against a section of wall and a secret door opened on unseen hinges, silently. "What's this?" Gavin asked.
"I made another gamble months ago. I bet that you would end up in the black cell eventually, because I know your father."
The narrow tunnel ascended sharply, barely wide enough for Gavin's turned shoulders to pass, and so short that he had to stoop to walk, but there was no stopping. He felt as if the darkness were chasing him with eager fingers. In minutes they emerged into an empty little hut with curtains drawn. In piles and hanging from hooks and standing in towers were pitch and scrapers and lines and buoys and more lines and lanterns and various other implements for the keeping of ships. Gavin guessed it was one of the boatkeeper's shacks at the Cromeria's back dock. It was still dark out, but a hint of light trickled around the cracks in the walls and around the curtains, hinting at coming dawn. Grinwoodie picked up a wrapped bundle.
"You asked before how you're to do it," he grinned. "If one is to kill a god, one must be properly armed."
Then Grinwoodie, the hidden old man of the desert, Anazar, unwrapped a sword that was not a sword. Its blade was long, light, thin, with twin black whorls crisscrossing around each of seven shining jewels, one for each color, although to Gavin's eye there were a uniform brightness and tone. Along its spine was a thin musket barrel, except for the last hand's breadth, which was only a sweeping blade that served as both sword point and bayonet. The blinding knife. To cover his sudden fear, Gavin said, "You old bastard. You know my father wants this more than anything in the world, right?"
"Of course."
"And what do you think happens when I pass the impassable reef, climb the tower that's probably just a trick of the light, climb the footstool of the Lord of Light himself, and stab him with this?" Grinwoodie grinned an arrogant grin, shook his head.
"Are you really as desperate to believe in gods and devils as the rest of them? Knowing what you know, having done what you've done? Orholm is no god. It is merely the nexus of this world's magic. It's not sentient. It's not a person or a godhead. It is the wobbling, unbalanced axle around which all magic rotates. It is the center that cannot hold. If you destroy this nexus men call Orholm, you kill magic itself. It will be an end of the tyranny of the Cromeria and an end to the magical storms that have devastated our world for millennia beyond counting. It will end the world putting one man in power while another is his slave, merely because the first can do magic. For that hope for justice, I have wagered everything."
"Regardless of the cost?" Gavin asked.
"The cost to do nothing is greater.
You really think the blinding knife will blind God himself?"
"This is the problem with erasing your own history, as the Cromeria has done, never trusting its own with dangerous knowledge. Sometimes the most dangerous things are exactly what you need to save yourself."
"What are you talking about?" Gavin asked. "Erasing history? Was this some kind of order conspiracy theory?"
"How I would love to sit and talk with you for an afternoon and tell you all the parts of your reign you owe to me, and all the things you misinterpreted through the decades. It would be better if your father were there too, for he's been the most substantial foe by far. But we have little time. Dawn comes and light waits for no man, am I right?"
He peeked out the curtain, then dropped it back in place. "I have no idea what you're talking about. What are your demands?"
"Do you remember this?" Grinwoodie asked.
He upended a black velvet bag into his hand, and a jewel the color of midnight dropped into his hand. It somehow radiated darkness, or sucked light into itself.
It was living black Luxin, but it was something more. If the black Luxin in Gavin's eye patch was a child of eternal darkness, this was Mother Night herself. "The black seed crystal," Grinwoody said. "You remember now?"
"I have no memory of that."
Except that he felt an instinctive fear and revulsion at the sight of it. It was too painful to even behold. "You created this at Sundered Rock." Grinwoody pushed back a curtain from a window and looked out at the water. Then he turned again to Gavin. "Or perhaps this is an older one. You see, the Chromeria used to deny that seed crystals exist, even while they hoarded them. The seed crystals call their color of drafters to themselves, which is why, unknowing, drafters have always come here for their teaching. But uncontrolled, unchecked, they create the Bane, and the Bane calls whites much more powerfully. The Chromeria likes to believe that there's only one seed crystal of each color, as if one can wish that there should be only one volcano, or one hurricane, or one earthquake, because one is devastating enough. The truth is, any sufficiently powerful drafter can create one, like you did at Sundered Rock, or they can spontaneously appear, as they have recently, if there's too much of their color. Maybe it's random. Maybe it coalesces around a drafter of that color, like the first crystal in a freezing pond. What does it matter? When you create the right conditions, the Bane appears. And the conditions now? Without you balancing? It's like all magic is a pond below freezing, waiting for that first crystal. Only death can follow, Dazen Guile.
Oh, good. Here I was thinking things looked grim.
Grinwoody stared at him, unsmiling.
Apparently that irreverence has helped keep you alive and sane. I hope it continues to work for you.
Gavin swallowed, flippancy gone. So what does the black do? Does it make a black Bane?
I've never heard of such a thing, but then they'd have erased that, too, if such didn't spontaneously erase themselves from men's memories, as your conflagration at Sundered Rock did. No, Dazen, I'm not going to tell you any more. All you need to know is this.
He balanced the sword on the floor, tip down, and set the black seed crystal on its pommel. It sank into the pommel, melted, and a change rushed over the entire surface of the sword. What had been black and white entwined now shimmered with darkness. As Grinwoody turned the blade, entire sections dulled in the light as if they were a polarized lens.
You find the nexus of magic, and you stab the blinding knife into it. I don't care if it's a thing or a person or God himself. You kill it, and our deal's complete.
Simple. Why me? Gavin asked. You've got dozens, hundreds of people loyal unto death to you.
The blinding knife's powers can only be activated by a prism. Climbing the tower was once a pilgrimage open to all, but after Vician's sin, the priests at White Mist Reef created magical locks on the tower to keep drafters from reaching the top, to protect the nexus, you see. There's a magical lock at each level, a blue lock to block blue drafters, a red to block reds, and so forth, so only a non-drafter will be able to reach the top of the tower.
How do you know this?
The Chromeria has always tried but failed to gain a monopoly on old knowledge. We Braxians have protected our own histories.
But if there are locks, surely there's one for black.
Not according to the records. Either black resists being formed in such ways, or the priests felt black defiled them to use. That's why they formed the reef instead. Failing to keep out the worst, they decided to keep out everyone.
But you don't know if this will work.
Of course not. But I do know that you're the only person in the world who has a chance,
Grinwoody said.
Only a non-drafter can reach Orholm. Only a prism can use the blinding knife to kill him. Only you are both.
I never expected to find you betting on me, Gavin said.
One thing I like about you guys, people are usually either fighters or survivors. You're both.
Gavin looked at the blade and couldn't even think. It was like staring down an infinite chasm now. Where before it had been like staring at the sun. Each was too terrible to behold for long.
It felt hungry. "So let's pretend I'm an enthusiastic participant," he said. "How am I supposed to get through White Mist Reef? You have drafters who can handle a skimmer?"
"I sent a skimmer already. It shattered in the stresses passage through the reef put on it. I'm sending you on a normal ship."
"Mostly." Grinwoody checked the window again. Gavin was incredulous. "And what kind of a lunatic would be willing to attempt to sail through White Mist Reef?"
"The kind that gambles."
"What the fuck does that mean?" Then Grinwoody opened the door. Gavin followed him out onto the Chromeria's back dock. In the lightning grey of dawn, a magnificent white ship with a glimmering sheen was docked at the quay, but Gavin barely had a moment to take it in.
"My friend!"
a voice boomed out of Gavin's past. The human avatar of Braggadocio ambled down the quay in an open jacket with no tunic beneath, wild hair, baggy trousers, and a huge, crooked-toothed grin.
"Gunner," Gavin said. "Of course it's you." "You look worst hand last time," Gunner said.
Gavin thought it was a crack about his missing fingers at first, but then he translated, "Worse than last time." But then Gunner stopped, suddenly stricken. His eyes were fixed on Gavin's eye patch as if it were a serpent that might strike him.
"What's with the evil eye? Is it bad luck?"
"Only for our enemies," Grinwoody said.
"Indeed?"
Gunner asked Gavin, still disconcerted. The man could be childlike in his superstitions.
"Troth," Gavin said. "Diggory, been told I got a fearsome aspect my own self. Guess I can use you to loosen the bowels of any poppy fiends we got. I'll keep my deal," he said, recovering his swaggering tone. "Gunner abides his bets."
Grinwoody lifted his eyebrows at the man's insouciance, but said nothing. Gavin said, "You gambled for this?"
"Nah, sorta. I suppose you could say, yes. So you see, after I lost the first time, my auntie, the gun sword, his the ship yonder, he asked me if I wanted to go double or nothing. I felt real down-like about losing your pokey boom stick, plus I didn't have anything left to lose except this mighty fine jacket what I plundered from an Elysian pirate king. Plus, whatever his gunner's luck been so bad he's lost twice in a row."
He twisted his ratty beard.
So, after I lost again, he said I got to sail my old bosom friend Guile through White Mist Reef. He calls that losing. And if we live, I keep the ship. You know our missing?"
Gunner asked.
"Our mission?"
"Oh, yes."
"Ain't it exasperating?"
"Exciting? Exhilarating?" That was one way to put it.
"Not so loud, please,"
Grinwoody said, glancing back toward the Chromeria looming above them all.
"Can't wait to show you my new girl," Gunner said. "Guile, brother. If we pull this off, we'll be legends,"
Gavin sighed. "Gunner, we're already legends." Gunner winked.
"That's Captain Gunner to you."
Gavin looked up at the Chromeria looming above him. Somewhere up there was Caris. She was this close. She was on this island, greeting this dawn, and she would never know he was here. He was about to get on a ship and leave, going to his death, no doubt, and she would never know he'd been this close. All that stuff about controlling the Black Luxin in Gavin's eye patch could be a bluff. Could be. But the Order was here, armed, unstoppable, standing behind everyone and everything he loved. Grinwoody laid the blinding knife out over his palms.
"Let me make something clear, Guile. I have watched you for decades now. I have seen you prevaricate and charm. I have seen you baffle and obfuscate. I have seen you stand steady as a mountain and then dodge the inevitable with the grace of a bull dancer. I have seen you appear to lose, only to emerge quietly victorious years later. Some would see you as diminished by the loss of your drafting. I don't accept that. So let me tell you this, as a man who fully appreciates the powers of his opponent and the dire position I'm putting that resourceful man in, I don't know if Orholm can be destroyed, but I expect you to find a way to do it. I expect you to turn your whole heart and mind and soul to accomplishing it. If you fail, I will kill everyone you love. Her first."
He cast his eyes up toward the prism's tower where Caris must be.
"If anything happens to me, or you reveal me, she dies. If she disappears, one of those she trusts enough to take with her will be mine, and she will die.
If any of 100 things happens that is not your obedience and success, I will take away every bright and happy thing in this world that you know. On the other hand, he said, his voice taking on a happy tone as if he hadn't been threatening Gavin a moment before, if you succeed, you will be the man who changed the world forever, who indeed saved the world. He offered the blinding knife in his hands to Gavin. Some work of noble notes may yet be done, eh? What will it be? Death or a chance?
Looking into Grinwoodie's black orbs, no, Anazar's, there was nothing of the snivelling slave in this man. Gavin believed him completely. There was no weaseling out of this, no third way, no drafting something so audacious that no one else had ever dreamed of it to escape. Perhaps it was a measure of Gavin's stubborn arrogance, even here, even now, reduced to this, that his thought wasn't of how impossible it all was. He thought, but what if I succeed? Magic was lost to him, but that was very different from killing magic altogether. Everything he'd done and built and dreamed and created had been because of and with magic. The whole society, his family's wealth and privilege, his living while his brother died, the skimmers, the condor. Grinwoodie couldn't be right. But what if he was? Whistling a melodious little trill, Gunner nudged him.
Come on, what'll it be? Death or glory?
Gavin rubbed the eye patch, and the touch of the black Luxin jewel sent unpleasant tingles through his fingers and down his wrist. He pulled his hand away. As the snowy-fingered dawn reached across the sky like a thief, he grabbed the dark, blinding knife and said, Let's sail.
Death and glory, Captain Gunner.
Death or glory? Or,
Gunner said. Not likely. He cast his eyes up at the tower. Goodbye, Karis. Farewell, my love.